Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 351, titled Mind Jihad, Part 3, More About the Muslim Brotherhood. This is being recorded on March 9th of the year 2002. This broadcast is going to continue discussion and analysis of the events in and around the attacks of September 11th, 2001. Now, very quickly, this program is going to be continuing our discussion of Islamofascism. This should not be misunderstood as characterizing Islam as fascist, but rather there is a very profound element within Islam that constitutes a form of theocratic fascism, and it in turn has very strong relationships with not only international fascism through the ages, but also elements of the petroleum industry, elements of the intelligence or the petroleum faction of U.S. intelligence, and through that and beyond that, the underground Reich. I have analyzed the September 11th, 2001 attacks as literally constituting a synthesis of the attack on Pearl Harbor and the Reichstag fire. If Hitler had been in the White House when Pearl Harbor was attacked, this is basically what you would be seeing. It is both an attack by a hostile foreign power, and it constitutes what may very well turn out to be the coming of fascism to America. We're going to begin by taking a look at someone who is very familiar to longtime listeners. This is Jörg Haider, the so-called yuppie fascist of Austria, whose Freedom Party began in the late 40s as a vehicle for the rehabilitation of Austrian Nazis who had served Hitler. In many ways, his party constitutes sort of a three-piece suit reconstitution of fascism, albeit with a superficially friendly face. We've dealt with Jörg Haider in the past. We've also dealt with Saddam Hussein and the fascist antecedents of his regime in Iraq, and also in connection with the Bormann Organization and the remarkable work of Paul Manning, we've dealt with the fact that Muammar Gaddafi's Secret Service was put together by former Gestapo chief Heinrich Mueller, who in turn was running a group of ex-SS officers through the Reinhard Galen spy outfit that was recruited first to put together Nasser's Secret Service and then later Gaddafi's. In the context of Jörg Haider, in the context of his fascist heritage and fascist manifestations, and in the context of the fascist heritage of Saddam Hussein and also of the Secret Service of Muammar Gaddafi, consider the following. And again, if my talk of Islamofascism seems crazy, well, listen to the following. This is from the Financial Times of Tuesday, March 5th of 2002. In the Avenue of the Americas column on the op-ed page, we find the following item titled Life Change, and it reads, Is Jörg Haider, Austria's extreme right-winger, about to become a Muslim? Saif el-Islam Gaddafi, son of the Libyan president, says his controversial friend Haider has asked him for a German-language Quran and told him he wants to become a Muslim. According to Gaddafi, Haider's ancestors originated in Arab Andalusia 400 years ago and converted to Christianity, which may explain just why Haider ignored the anger of Washington and Vienna recently to travel to Iraq. And I would point out that that came after there was a pointed diplomatic, at least saber-rattling, in the direction of Iraq by the United States. Jörg Haider then begins giving open diplomatic support to Saddam Hussein. And that exemplifies what I have called the Islamo-fascist slash underground Reich axis. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood, a fellow named Youssef Nada, who is a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, also headed up a financial organization called Al-Taqwa, later renamed Nada Management and now closed. Nada Management and Al-Taqwa were alleged by the United States and other intelligence services to have been involved with Osama bin Laden's organization, something that Youssef Nada and Al-Taqwa deny. We're going to be taking a look at some of the heritage of the Muslim Brotherhood, and we're also going to take a look in particular at some of the Muslim Brotherhood's connections to various Islamic charitable organizations, which in turn have been alleged to have served as fronts for terrorist activity. This, like so many aspects of the 2001 attacks of September 11th, should not be oversimplified. Many of these institutions no doubt do serve as charitable institutions, but religious and charitable institutions have also traditionally been utilized by intelligence services for covert operations. So this is not a situation to be oversimplified. Just as the issue of denying people their civil rights in this country who may be connected to terrorism is not to be oversimplified, it's a very bad precedent, but when legitimate organizations and religious organizations are used for intelligence purposes, it leads to that sort of abuse. We're going to turn now to the book Dollars for Terror, subtitled The United States and Islam. That was authored by Richard LaBeviere, translated by Martin Demare, published in softcover by Algora Publishing in New York. It was copyright 2000 in softcover. The ISBN number is 1-892941-06-6. Their website, www.algora.com. And we're going to review briefly some of the fascist heritage of the Muslim Brotherhood, which in turn we're going to discuss in connection with the September 11th attacks. First, we're going to take a look at Hassan al-Banna, the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood, and not only some of the political allegiance between the Muslim Brotherhood and the fascist powers of Europe, but also how the Muslim Brotherhood was structured along Islamo-fascist lines, and this will perhaps clarify that term. Turning to Dollars for Terror, lastly, the emergence and the rise to power of fascism, hostile to French and British colonialism, gave rise to many analogies with corporatist propaganda and the methods of mobilization of Mussolini's gangs. Denouncing philosophy and the social sciences as practices contrary to the teachings of the Quran, Hassan al-Banna, the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood, founded the essentials of his message on the condemnation of the principle of separation of the state and religion, and set the establishment of a theocratic state as his movement's goal. He also preached the reestablishment of the caliphate as the only framework that could be effective in uniting all the believers, and promoted the dissolution of political parties which, according to him, divide the Muslims. Reducing Western civilization to colonialism, Hassan al-Banna summarizes his movement's ideology thus, quote, "Islam is doctrine, divine worship, the fatherland, the nation, religion, spirituality, the Quran, and the sword," unquote. And then of some of the ideological structures of this movement, skipping down, and by the way, we went into this in more detail in For the Record 343. Taking Italy's choices under Mussolini for inspiration, the economic program of the Brotherhood set three priorities: the instigation of a land reform, the prohibition of usury, and the termination of income tax, which was replaced by the religious tax, the zakat. The social policy foresaw a new law on labor founded on corporations. This economic program would more directly reveal its relationship to totalitarian ideologies a few years later with the works of Muhammad Ghazali, Islam and Economic Questions, of Syed Qutb, Social Justice in Islam, and of Al-Bahi Lotfi, Islam, Neither Communism Nor Capitalism. The populist content of such writings corresponds to the social profile of most of the followers, who were recruited from the better-off rural populace and the urban middle class. The brothers denounced the profiteers and those who were starving the people. Muhammad Ghazali recommended, quote, "an economic regimen similar to that which existed in Nazi Germany and fascist Italy," unquote. The moral code is also an important component in this program, which is intended to create the, quote, "new Muslim man," unquote. It is founded on the strict observance of the rules of Islam, the punishment of any transgression, and on a teaching strictly in conformity to the precepts of Islam. Women's role in society is examined closely. The notion of the equality of the sexes is inherently negated by the concept of the supremacy of male social responsibilities. Justified by a literal interpretation of the Quran, the, quote, "natural," unquote, place of the woman is in the home. That's some of the fascist heritage and ideology of the Muslim Brotherhood, reviewing again very briefly an alleged allegiance of Youssef Nada of Al-Taqwa, later Nada Management, alleged again by the United States to be associated with Al-Qaeda. Its Nassau, Bahamas branch was founded in part with capital from six members of the bin Laden family. Turning again to Dollars for Terror of Youssef Nada, we read, "But Youssef Nada is even better known to the Egyptian secret services, who have evidence of his membership in the armed branch of the fraternity of the Muslim Brotherhood in the 1940s. At that time, according to the same sources, he was working for the Abwehr under Admiral Canaris and took part in a plot against King Farouk. This was not the first time that the path of the Muslim Brothers crossed that of the servants of the Third Reich. The founder of the fraternity himself, Hassan al-Banna, served as an intermediary between those who went on to become the free officers, in particular Anwar al-Sadat, and the agents of Nazi Germany." By the way, Admiral Canaris was the head of the Abwehr German military intelligence in World War II. Now, we're going to take a look at some more connections and operational branches of Al-Taqwa, later Nada Management. And by the way, we've talked about that in, for the record, 335, 336, 338, 340, 341, 2, 3, 4, and 350, among other programs. Now, turning to some of the Italian connections of Al-Taqwa. Now, bear in mind Youssef Nada and his heritage and the allegation that he is connected to Al-Qaeda, which he and associates firmly deny. This is, and that, by the way, alleged by the U.S. and other governments, this is one of the Italian connections of Al-Taqwa. And turning to Dollars for Terror, we read, "The Milanese connection originates in the Bahamas. Since leaving its first head office in Nassau, Al-Taqwa established itself at NIGH, Nasreddin International Group Holdings, 10 DeWall Street in Nassau." And again, six members of the bin Laden family helped to capitalize this branch. Continuing, "The NIGH holding company deserves close attention. Youssef Nada's assistant, Ali Galeb Himat, works there. The Bank of Gotard is NIGH's bank through account CCB number 313656 through the agency of Chiasso in the name of a charity foundation. The Bank of Gotard also appears in a confidential report on Al-Taqwa's activity under the heading of Business Connections. The bank manager of Gotard, Claudio Generali, told me that he does not know either Al-Taqwa or its director, much less the holding company, NIGH. The president and creator of NIGH, Nasreddin Ahmed Idris, who also appears on the list of the shareholders in Al-Taqwa, is honorary consul of Kuwait in Milan. Living in Italy, Switzerland, and Morocco, this businessman directs a multitude of financial companies, most of which end up leading again to the nebula of Al-Taqwa." We're going to take a look at an Al-Taqwa subsidiary in Italy called Gulf Office, and in turn, we're going to look at evidentiary tributaries running between this subsidiary and Italian Prime Minister and former P2 member Silvio Berlusconi, and we're going to review another element connecting the milieu of Berlusconi with the milieu of Youssef Nada from FTR 342. Reading again from Dollars for Terror, speaking of one of the subsidiaries of Al-Taqwa, one of them, Gulf Office, Association for Commercial, Industrial, and Tourist Development between the Gulf States and Switzerland, currently dormant, had been housed in the same building as the Mosque of Lugano. In 1994, the Italian judicial system had its sights on Gulf Office and conducted an inquiry into its activities in the context of the Operation Clean Hands. Well, Operation Clean Hands will be well known to veteran listeners to this program. That was a not altogether successful inquiry on the part of the Italian judicial and political authorities into the web of political corruption in Italy, which embraced not only the heirs to Mussolini, but also organized crime, elements of Western intelligence, including NATO intelligence, and also the P2 lodge of Licio Gelli, one of whose members was Silvio Berlusconi. Licio Gelli was an Italian fascist and, in many ways, the crypto-fascist, de facto crypto-fascist leader of Italy in much of the post-war period. Nicknamed the Puppet Master, he was, among other things, an honored guest at Ronald Reagan's inauguration. A member of the P2, the late Philip Guarino, was on the Republican Ethnic Heritage Organization, the overtly fascist wing of the Republican Party that we've spoken about many times in the past, most recently in For the Record 346. Turning now to a discussion of Prime Minister Berlusconi and clean hands, and bear in mind that the subsidiary of Altaqua called Gulf Office was a focal point of the Clean Hands inquiry in 1994. In that context, consider the following article from The Guardian, that's the British Guardian, of January 25th of 2002. This is an article by Philip Willen, W-I-L-L-A-N, in Rome, and its headline, UN tells Berlusconi, leave courts alone. This is accessed from their website at www.guardian.co.uk. The full URL will appear in the written description in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website when the description for FTR 351 is posted. Again, The Guardian 125, 2002 by Philip Willen in Rome. UN tells Berlusconi, leave the courts alone. The UN Human Rights Commission has stepped into the Italian row about the independence of the judiciary, responding to the recent protest by magistrates against political interference in a planned reorganization. Its special rapporteur on the independence of judges and lawyers, Dato Param Kumaraswamy, has asked to visit Rome urgently to investigate. His letter pointed out that members of the judiciary had accused the government of trying to delay proceedings against the Prime Minister, Silvio Berlusconi, who was facing charges of bribery. Those charges, by the way, were brought under the investigation known as Clean Hands, which was also looking into the Altaqua subsidiary, Gulf Office. Skipping down. Mr. Kumaraswamy said in a statement that he had asked to visit after claims by Francesco Saverio Borelli, Milan's most senior judge, about interference in trials and reports of legal action pending against the judge. Mr. Borelli, who led the Clean Hands corruption inquiry in the 1990s, accused Rome of demonizing the judiciary and introducing dangerous reforms, including the removal of escorts from prosecutors and judges. That, by the way, is police escorts. Continuing. The judges say that plans to reorganize the judiciary could put prosecutors under government control. Mr. Kumaraswamy said, confrontation of this nature could undermine the rule of law in Italy, unquote. Skipping down. The timing brought to mind the 1994 incident when the Prime Minister was formally notified that he was under investigation for alleged bribery as he chaired a UN crime conference in Naples. Mr. Berlusconi has been accused of rushing through legislation intended to protect himself against the judiciary by putting obstacles in the way of international cooperation between magistrates and reducing the penalties for false accounting. He denies charges of bribery, tax evasion, and false accounting, and says he is the victim of political bias. One should note in particular, in addition to the legislation, the fact that police escorts are going to be removed according to under the Berlusconi program from judges and prosecutors. As we looked at in For the Record programs, or RFA rather, 17 to 21, there was a history of political assassinations of Italian judicial personnel who have been investigating P2 corruption. Berlusconi, a member of the P2. Now, bearing in mind the fact that Altaqua subsidiary Gulf Office was investigated in connection with Clean Hands, consider the following, reviewing an item from For the Record 342. This was researched and translated for us by Dave White. This comes from L'Espresso of November 22nd of 2001. It's by Peter Gomez and Leo Sisti. It's headlined, The Alms of Monsieur Youssef Nada. And it reads in part as follows. October 19th, 1997. A Saudi Boeing carrying Crown Prince Al-Walid lands at Miramar Airport in Rimini. A white Rolls-Royce whisks the Saudi prince to a meeting organized by the Piu Manzu Center. In the middle of a small crowd ready to pay his respects to the house of Al-Walid stands a businessman already familiar to the prince, Youssef Nada. The Italian-Tunisian businessman is one of the founders of Altaqua Limited. The prince and the businessman set out for the Novelli Theater, the site of the conference. From the stage, the prince begins his address with the words, I have confidence in Italy, unquote. 4 years later, August 2001. This, by the way, a month before the attacks. Prince Al-Walid, the Saudi associate of Mediaset, is received by Silvio Berlusconi. 2 months later, the prince gives a $10 million check to New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani. Meanwhile, the name of Youssef Nada appears on George Bush's list of alleged financiers of the terrorist Osama bin Laden. Mediaset is the largest of Silvio Berlusconi's many formidable media holdings, and 48% of Mediaset is owned by Prince Al-Walid, part of the Saudi elite, who have been rather conclusively at this point linked to the funding of Al-Qaeda, and who have also funded Al-Taqwa. Whether or not the charges that Al-Taqwa is connected with Al-Qaeda wind up being borne out in court. I say in court because there's often a difference between intelligence matters and judicial matters. Now, turning again to discussion of Al-Taqwa in Italy, turning again to the book Dollars for Terror, in a chart of the Financial Brigade of Milan, the telephone coordinates of the Gulf office are the same as those on a propaganda video for the Algerian Armed Islamic Groups, or GIA, that have been sold under the table in the mosques of Europe since the end of 1994. The images were recorded after the attack on the prefect of Tisimsilt and its guard some 80 miles south of Algiers. It was one of the first large-scale ambushes by the GIA in January of 1994. The document does not deal with the attack itself, but to the return of the Islamists to their camp. It shows their joy at having brought death to irreligious people to have caused death in the name of Allah. Lingering on the weapons seized during the ambush, the camera closes in on the commando's chief, who harangues his flocks, quote, "These weapons which are here before you, we seized them from the impious, thanks to God. When our brothers in the true faith see this film, they will see that God is with them and that God will help them, as he helped us, to overcome their enemies. Praise God." In fact, Gulf office served as a financial and material cover for the Islamic communities of Tessin and Milan, where a certain Sa'ad officiates. He has free access to all the company's facilities to provide support for various Islamist groups of the Maghreb. Through his relationships with the representatives, unquote, of the Algerian Islamic Salvation Front, or FIS, and its antennae in the Lyon region, Sa'ad saw to the importation of the video cassettes produced by an agency in Kuwait City. What we're going to do next is to take a break from the book Dollars for Terror, and bearing in mind Gulf office and some of the Italian connections of Al-Taqwa, and in also the connections of Gulf office to the Clean Hands Inquiry, which in turn was looking into Silvio Berlusconi and charged him with bribery. Berlusconi himself has overlap with the milieu of the Saudi elite and also Al-Qaeda. We're going to take a look now at an article from the Wall Street Journal this past week, which would indicate that perhaps the profound petrodollar connection is in fact being tweaked, so to speak, by the Saudi elite, and that the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, Paul O'Neill, may perhaps be undergoing a little bit of revision in connection with the attitude that he has taken towards some of the Islamic charities, which appear to be doubling, not that they aren't charities, but are doubling as Al-Qaeda funding conduits, according to the research of numerous intelligence services, and not just the United States. Wall Street Journal, Thursday, March 7th of 2002, has the following article by James M. Dorsey. This is special to the Wall Street Journal Dateline Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. It's headlined, "O'Neill Promises Caution in Citing Saudis." U.S. Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill told Saudi officials and business leaders here he understands their concern that freezing the assets of charities and individuals based in the kingdom could damage their reputations. The secretary sought to reassure the Saudis that the U.S. is refining its processing of intelligence to minimize such damage. Mr. O'Neill, on the third leg of a four-nation Mideast tour aimed at cementing Gulf state cooperation with the Bush administration's anti-terror campaign, also said he would consider a proposal that the U.S. issue a list of Islamic charities it considers free of terrorist links. The secretary took part in talks with Saudi officials, including Crown Prince Abdullah bin Abdul Aziz Al Saud, Interior Minister Prince Nayef bin Abdul Aziz Al Saud and Finance Minister Ibrahim bin Abdul Aziz bin Abdullah Al Asaf, as well as a group of prominent Saudi businessmen. That would almost certainly, by the way, include the bin Mahfouzes and the bin Ladens. Both families have connections to the bin Bushes. Continuing. Mr. O'Neill said that the U.S. is fine-tuning its targeting of institutions and individuals suspected of funding terrorists and speeding up the processing of those it has already acted against, according to the secretary and Saudi participants in the meetings. Quote, "There is a learning process going on here," unquote, Mr. O'Neill said later in a telephone interview, skipping down. The Saudis, who since the September 11th attacks have worried that the kingdom's businessmen were being singled out as suspects, said they walked away from their meeting with the secretary reassured. Quote, "I was very impressed," said Ghassan al-Suleiman, a member of the board of the Jeddah Chamber of Commerce, again quoting, "He is very knowledgeable and a very good listener. He showed a lot of understanding," unquote. Mr. O'Neill said he had embarked on his trip to, quote, "share ideas and insights and to have an opportunity to observe and learn," unquote. He said his meetings in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Bahrain left him, quote, "very impressed as well." Mr. O'Neill said his visits so far had lifted the veil of mystery from Islamic banking and that he had learned that, quote, "it is a legitimate way of doing business," unquote. There is no doubt that there is business legitimacy to these organizations, also that they serve as genuine charitable organizations, but there also would appear to be little doubt that they're also being utilized for terrorist purposes, which makes things rather complex. One thing that I did find interesting was the degree of deference that Mr. O'Neill had shown under the circumstances, just like his superiors, Crown Prince George Walker bin Talal Abdul Aziz and company. This, no doubt, and all humor under the circumstances aside, three powerful Saudi connections to the American economy, oil, in turn the petrodollar investment into American business, such as Carlyle, such as Arbusto Energy, which joins both George's Bush to the bin Laden family, and also the Reagan debt of the 1980s, that much of U.S. foreign debt is now held by the Saudis. One wonders whether that perhaps has something to do with the learning process that Mr. O'Neill described. The programs I've recorded over the years are available from a CD and tape duplication service called Spitfire, one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They can be reached at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. Email mail@spitfirelist.com. Visit their website at www.spitfirelist.com. By the time you hear this program, there will be a detailed annotated description of the program in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Be sure to follow the links in that description to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM, which have virtually the entire For the Record series available for download and or streaming on Real Audio. The first airing of each For the Record program takes place at 9 p.m. on Monday night on KKUP. Visit their website for instructions on how to listen at www.kkup.com. Please be aware that all online materials are to be distributed as far and wide as people can. Feel free to send them all over and to copy them as much as people wish. That is what they are for. That concludes Side A of For the Record Program number 351, Mind Jihad, Part 3, More About the Muslim Brotherhood. This is being recorded on March 9th of the year 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.